Blog Talk Radio.
Think it, cause you never know when it's over. Will you be standing when it's over? And to my truth from the what you gonna do when it's over? Will you be here for your child to have a shoulder?
And you ain't nothing without them. If you marry, show her you love her. Put none before her. Yeah, we fuss and fight, but them my sisters and brothers. I got the game from my daddy. He taught me how to hustle. First time I ever served some time in jail was with my uncle. Damn, I was hot. The cops stayed on my bumper when I should have been at home getting ready for school in the morning. But I was always there, even though I was yawning, trying to sell the candy I sold at the store on the corner. Lost at my house again in a stolen car with my friends. Well, I end up in prison. My brother got killed. Then we both had kids when we was down serving beers. Feel blessed to pick up a phone, call my mom and dad. To make a long story short, if it quacked, then it's a duck. Keep your mind out them streets and your head in them books. Come on with the hook. Turn this motherfucking shit up.
dreadlock, fuck a cop, hip hop. Make your head bob, bounce to this socialist movement. My environment made me the nigga I am. Uncle Sam came and got me and the rest of my fam. Try to infiltrate and murder off the best of my clan. I'm not American, punk Democrat or Republican, remember that. Most of the cats we know be hustling. My mama worked all her life and still struggling. I blame it on the government and say it on the radio. And if you don't already know, all these Uncle Tom ass kissing niggas got to go. Got to go, got to go, got to go.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned in to the Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, with your host, People Political Party National Chairman, the Honorable Nat Turner, and co-host, New Orleans Local Chairman, Brother Leon Exibai, which is me. We want you to call in every Tuesday night, same black place, and same black time at 845-277-9266. Now, if you want to participate, press the number one to participate on your dial. Tonight's topic, the Black Panther Party 10 Court Platform Still Relevant Today. Again, the topic is the Black Panther Party 10-Point Platform Still Relevant Today. Now, we're going to open the lines up and for our host, People Political Party, National Chairman, Nat Turner. Black power, black power. Can you hear you? Can you hear me, Brother Nat Chairman? Nat Chairman, Nat Turner?
Yeah,
can you hear me? Yeah,
yeah,
hear you.
Can you hear me? All right, all right.
Yes,
I'm here,
sir.
Man.
Black power, black power.
Power. I'm saying, you will rule.
Black power, you're loud and clear, Jeff.
Yeah, we're right on.
Do your thing, brother.
Yeah, we man, want to welcome you, the listeners, you know, to the radio show, you know, another show. You know what I'm saying? We just new thus far, and more and more we go, we perfect the game. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, the night show deals with the 10-point platform program of the Black Panther Party that was founded in 1966 by Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale in Oakland, California. And they put together a basis for what the Black Panther Party would stand for in relation to the conditions of people of African descent or the descendants of the Africans who were brought here to what is now known as the Americas, you know, made a slave by force, you know, was the backbone, the underlying structure, what is now known as the capitalist system of America, and all its glamour, glitz, and, you know, glamour and wealth and material production and consumption. And so, due to that, the Black Panthers formed and became a political formation. Originally, the Black Panther Party of Self-Defense, which embraced the Black nationalist ideology, influenced by, you know, such phenomenal things as Marcus Garvey, you know, Malcolm X, and others such as Robert Williams, who, you know, many of us so-called black people aren't too familiar with, as there are others, you know, but just to give you just a basic understanding of what led to the Black Panther Party. This 10-point platform became the ideological framework of the Black Panther Party in terms of them expanding outward in their understanding of what is called the system or the state. You know, it's oppressive and reactionary, repressive forces that whenever the Black Panther Party were able to influence the masses of the people in a revolutionary way to become what J. Edgar referred to as the greatest threat to the internal security of the government of America. You know, so they were declared to be public enemy number one. And, you know, some young brothers and sisters, you know, in their 20s, as young as, I believe, 15 years old, you know, had made up the Black Panther Party. And they were able to establish chapters around the country. And due to their effectiveness, the government, FBI arm of the government, instituted what is known as the Counterintelligence Program, according to our folks, short, to what J. Edgar Hoover, the leader of the FBI, then, in the language or the expressions or the terminologies that he used to neutralize the Black Panther Party. So there were several hundred clandestine operations that were carried out against the Black Panther Party. They had received the bulk of the counterintelligence program, you know, backlash in the midst of other organizations that were contemporary with the Black Panther Party. SNCC, that is the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, out of which came a number of the Black Panther Party members. In fact, two of the most vocal or politically educated came out of SNCC, and who were known then as A-Trap Brown and Stokely Carmichael. A-Trap Brown, currently Imam Jamil El-Amin, who is currently a political prisoner on the trumped-up murder charge within the jurisdiction of Georgia, in and around Atlanta. Stokely Carmichael became known as Kwame Ture, who founded the All African People's Revolutionary Party and had a very thorough understanding of the system, the state of things, its contradictory relationship with people of African descent, in particularly, as Kwame Ture was a staunch black nationalist, and on a larger scale dealing with what is referred to the diaspora or the forced spreading around of people of African descent around the world and on the mother continent, the ideological framework was referred to as Pan-Africanism. And so these were, you know, two of the instrumental individuals that were in the Black Panther Party. And of course, we cannot leave out Chairman Fred, as everybody still knows him, Fred Hampton Sr., who was the deputy chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, who was assassinated by the government, was murdered by the government, political murder, December 4, 1969, in Chicago. I just wanted to, you know, throw a few names out there, and of course, other underground elements that were, you know, connected with the Black Panther Party, in particular the Assad Shakur, who is still currently in exile, in Cuba. But again, the effectiveness, the 10-point platform, is what led to the treatment that the Panthers would receive. Its effectiveness within the Black community, that they referred to as occupied colonies, due to the constant police presence in these Black communities or Black ghettos that were economically disenfranchised. And when you get a people in a position such as that, then they become vulnerable to the whims of the state, which is criminal. You cannot have crime without politics and politics without crime. You know, the various hardships that come with it that affected our communities back then and still affects our communities today. So we believe that the Black Panther Party 10-point platform program, not only was it relevant then, that it is relevant today, still today, in the 21st century, in the midst of all the technology, science and technology, you know, the present social engineering construct that binds the masses of the people to the state, to the material winds of the state. And so we want to take the opportunity in this show to go over each one and refresh, reconstitute whatever we can think of to keep alive something that was very practical, even scientific, but far from being utopian. There are you know, moments and times when you know, we can create things or come up with these things for sheer purposes of flattery, or in the abstract sense, you know, which has been very detrimental in our struggle in this part of the world, you know. So, but in the midst of that, you know, while before I get started, you know, again, if you have any listeners, you want to chime in or question, comment, whatever, don't forget to press 1 on your phone to be able to get in on tonight's topic. So we want to start with, point number 1. And this is from the original that I'm aware of. It says, we want freedom, power to determine the destiny of our Black community. We believe that Black people will not be free until we are able to determine our destiny. when we talk about freedom, what do we mean by freedom? And what we're saying is the power to determine our destiny. That is about as clear as freedom can get. for any group of people for that matter, because you will have been gotten the power back into your own hands, which is predicate for determining one's destiny. And so on that note, we understand clearly that our relationship with the state is based on power, and anything short of that is acquiescing in certain ways, which some of us may not be able to readily identify. Reform is no more than just reform in itself. As history has clearly shown, some of us, those who have taken an intricate look, we understand that the state has had to reform itself several times on the heels of what they refer to as the emancipation of the slaves in the 1860s and then the so-called Reconstruction period. But our destiny can only be achieved through possessing that power, which is what any nation has the right to and of itself in order to exist under conditions or material condition or a system that's feasible for them, where there's cohesion, peace, and understanding, minus all the bullshit about who is more extravagant than who, or who is more intelligent than who, or who has so-called right to, you know, the first slot at the table and all that madness. But to be able to determine our own destiny, to build a system that satisfies us, you know. And so that is what that freedom is based on. And there are those who have come in our midst for the past 100 years or so, over 100 years, who have come in our midst and have gotten us to believe in a particular type of freedom that has been projected on to us, minus of coming out from underneath this system as we know it. And this freedom is pretty much based on material freedom, what one can accumulate through various forms of making money legally, in more cases than not, receiving the education to be able to so-called make it, achieve the American dream. To them, to those individuals who have come in our midst, that is pretty much their definition of freedom. Of course, also the freedom to be able to roam where one pleases, to be able to enjoy oneself, to be able to have, of course, what is, you know, fair to us as the number one thing, and that is the right freedom to the vote, to participate in what we are told is a democracy. And history has clearly shown that the collective masses of the people have never been able to achieve this idea of a particular type of freedom that certain forces have come in our midst over the past 100 years and have, you know, tried to instill within us, which has been a complete failure. There's been moments of opulence, or these moments of successes, or these great moments of achievements that have been used to project onto the rest of us that somehow, some kind of way, now that black people have finally made it. These are no more than token gestures on the part of the state, those who steer the machine, the state machinery, in order to keep the collective masses in the dumbed down state. You know, so there will be other times and moments of different shows where we can go into specificity about who these individuals were and their current descendants in terms of ideology, this watered down version of freedom, which was contradictory or juxtaposed to what the Black Panther Party were referring to when we talk about freedom, when able to determine one's destiny, and in order to be able to determine one's destiny, then those individuals of that group or that collective or that nation or that tribe would have to have the power in order to be able to do so. In other words, so no one can push them around, tell them when they can come and go, to go here and go yonder and this and that and the other, which is short of being able to have the power to determine one's destiny. Point number two, the Black Panther Party leadership declared that we want full employment for our people. We believe that the federal government is responsible and obligated to give every man employment or guaranteed income. We believe that if the white American businessmen will not give full employment, then the means of production should be taken from the businessmen and placed in the community so that the people of the community can organize and employ all of its people and give a high standard of living. This is obviously a crucial element in order for people to be able to sustain themselves. And when they spoke about the federal government being responsible and obligated to give every man employment or guaranteed income, we can interpret that or understand that as, since we are told that we live in a democracy and that democracy is based on the people and that it is something that was built on the welfare of the people, as the word democracy is supposedly mean, comes from a Greek word, demos, which means in and of itself the people. And so therefore, the Black Panther Party began to understand those terminologies of that concept, the type of system that we were living under. So therefore, we should be able to have a guaranteed income. Now, there may be those who may point out and say, well, how could it be that we want to determine the right down destiny and depend on the federal government for being responsible, obligated to give man employment or guaranteed income? I think the thing is that when they say we believe that if the white businessmen will not give full employment, then the means of production should be taken from the businessmen and placed in the community so that the people of the community can organize and employ all of his people and give a higher standard of living. Malcolm X once said that when he was speaking about freedom in so many ways, that freedom can't be given. It must be taken. And of course, I understand and that, you know, using this type of speech may alarm some. But it was perfectly okay and it was perfectly all right for George Washington to also use the same terminology or speak in the same manner when he was referring to the kingdom of Britain, of Great Britain, the British Crown. And so if the people are not able to be sufficiently supplied with not only jobs or employment, but that employment meets the standards of human conditions where it doesn't pit one group against the other group, because the employment has an imbalance in it, even in terms of class. And so if the white businessmen were not able to achieve this who are being placed in the driver's seat to create employment, decent employment for the people, then it should be coming upon the people to take over that employment. In certain other instances, there are those who may understand this as the class struggle, where the labor force, labor classes, who are in perpetual slavery at the hands of the businessmen who own the means of production. And in some instances, you know, well, basically, there are those who understand this is the concept of Marxism, socialism, or communism, where in the end, the commune can, you know, finalize its struggle and meet its achievements in order to bring, you know, relief to those who are in the struggle with the white businessmen. And, of course, the means of production will have been placed in the hands of the people, and the people will, in the economic sense, will be able to determine their own destiny. And, of course, there are many other things that go along with that, such as, you know, wages, you know, the tax system, and so forth, you know. But, you know, when they talk about give a higher standard of living, and this higher standard of living, of course, is the same way that the white businessmen are able to live in their communities, which more times than not that we understand is the suburbs, and as opposed to the so-called urban communities, which is, you know, government euphemism for poor black people who are being held hostage in these neighborhoods because they're economically disenfranchised. And as a result of being economically disenfranchised, then naturally, you know, those who are held within these conditions will naturally seek other means to survive, which is what the state refers to as crime. And so I said a few ticks ago that, you know, well, crime and politics go hand in glove. If I didn't, well, I'm saying it now, that you can't have one without the other in this capitalist system. And so we understand, again, about full employment for the people, and that in this system, the way it's looking, then what the Black Panther Party spoke about when he said then the means of production should be taken from the businessmen and placed in the community so that the people of the community can organize and employ all of his people and give a high standard of living. And this is obviously something that's staring us in the face right now as we continue to struggle here in 2021 America. And the second point goes right into the third point, which is basically says we want an end to the robbery by the capitalists of our black community. Let me say this again. Point number three, it clearly states that we want an end to the robbery by the capitalists of our black community. We believe that this racist government has robbed us, and now we are demanding the overdue debt of 40 acres and two mules. 40 acres and two mules was promised 100 years ago as restitution for slave labor and mass murder of black people. We will accept the payment in currency, which will be distributed to our many communities. Germans are now aiding the Jews in Israel for the genocide of the Jewish people. The Germans murdered 6 million Jews. The American races have taken part in the slaughter of over 50 million black people. Therefore, we feel that this is a mighty demand that we make. Here, obviously, what we're facing, point number three, I need to understand, is the issue of reparation, the legitimacy of reparation as a result of the robbery of our people, which as an extension of physical slavery that our people had to perform by being held hostage under the gun, under the shotgun, or the overseer on a constant basis. We worked from Cansey in the morning to Cansey at night, which is what they call the day overtime. And now time, did we ever receive any residual return collectively as a people? While in the meantime, the proprietors, stakeholders, the stockholders, the shareholders were able to reap huge sums, enormous amounts of capital, which in turn what they use in order to be able to find themselves in the present condition or the present position that they're in today, being the capitalists that they are. And so we understand from the third point about the legitimacy of reparations. And as an example, the brilliance of Huey P. Newton, the genius of Huey P. Newton, taught us that as the experience of the Jewish group of the European segment or of the white so-called race of this world, who had went through the atrocities that they faced during World War II in particular, and that upon its heels, how they were assisted, helped, and aided in a reparatory sense. This is a very, deep subject, just for the sake of understanding the system of banking, how the banks were able to aid in the Jewish reparation cause or repairing the damage that the Jews had suffered from, the white Jewish population had suffered from at the hands of another white population of people who referred to themselves as German, who had a leader named Adolf Hitler, who espoused certain ideologies, espoused certain beliefs, which put him at odds with the white Jewish segment in Germany. And so if it was okay, then it's okay for the white Jewish segment to receive reparation or assistance at the hands of powerful bankers around the world, then it is also legitimate for the descendants of the Africans who were made slave by force to receive the residuals that their ancestors never got, and that we are the bloodline of those Africans who were made the slave and by which the capitalists enriched themselves to the tune of billions of dollars a day. They laid the foundation for what is known as the capitalist system. That those who have come along, these academics or scholars, European scholars, and even in some instances, so-called black people who have come along have tried to expunge the idea or the notion that this capitalist system of America was built off the slave trade. And so they've tried to turn the experience of the Holocaust, slave trade, the Black Holocaust, as a primitive stage, as the pre-stage to capitalism. And so we know historically, those who understand, that this is a bald-faced lie, that it wouldn't hold up to even the slightest amount of scrutiny. And so we understand that it was the basis of slave trade, the slave economy, that built this system, that laid down its foundation, which was able to raise its monuments and buildings around the country and to establish themselves on a federal level, into which now they find themselves an empire, their tentacles reaching beyond the jurisdiction of the borders of America. And so accepting this payment in currency, as we understand it, as a collective group of people. So that pretty much, you know, can sum up point number three. And of course, let me mention also, when you talk about the robbery of our black communities, which of course has extended into other groups who have entered the fray, having entered this country and have established themselves within their own communities and practicing their own form of nationalism. Historically, in these black communities, in these black colonies, we have seen foreign grocers, particularly several incidents and stories from the West Coast dealing with Korean-owned grocers or East Asian-owned grocery stores or persons of East Asian descent owning, you know, grocery stores within the occupied black colonies or communities of the West Coast, just to use as a specific example, to place it in the present context of the robbery of our black community. They are no more, no less than the same capitalist mindset as the white capitalists, as the European capitalists who have allowed them a stake in the shares to exploit our communities. You know, in to the point of what we call capitalist robbery. And of course, the so-called white man system of capitalism, where we had become during the Jim Crow era, segregated in communities and had been able to establish some form of economic independence on our part. And there are those of us who may be familiar or who understand or are familiar with what's referred to as Black Wall Street and the prosperity that it was able to achieve in the Midwest. And of course, as a result of the integration factor led by those, again, who have misguided us in the defining of what that freedom was, and as a result of that, we lost a lot of economic prosperity under the system of Jim Crow. Now, also, we have to take into account the disenfranchisement at the same time, which would, of course, leave us vulnerable to the whims of white capitalism, and therefore the robbery of our communities. Which during the 60s, what the Black Panther Party had understood, and so therefore became point number three. We want an end to the robbery by the capitalists of our black community. I want to add this too. In these days and times, we still see, as we still see point number three relevant. There are also those who are also black, who have the, you know, the black, you know, the capitalist mindset. And let me say this for the record. I understand that under this system, how should I say it, of being forced to go along in a sense. But there are ways we can deal with one another. And we say to our brothers and sisters who own, who are merchants, who own businesses, that we can find ways to exist with one another and develop type of understanding to where our communities can thrive. And so when they come under attack, as we see today, under this cold-hearted strategy referred to as gentrification, and so that whenever our communities come under attack, we have some type of defense mechanism to protect our communities when they come under attack. But in the meantime, capitalism doesn't really have a color. Black capitalism is just as dangerous as white capitalism. Point number four, which says we want decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. We believe that if the white landlords will not give decent housing to our black community, then the housing and the land should be made into cooperatives so that our community, the government aid, can build and make decent housing for its people. I'm going to read that one more time. We believe that if the white landlords will not give decent housing to our black community, then the housing and the land should be made into cooperatives so that our community, the government aid, can build and make decent housing for its people. Once again, there may be detractors who point out the dependency on government aid. And of course, you know, we expect it, but at the same time, we also understand, again, as the descendants of those who were forced to work for free, and that we are their bloodline, and therefore it is our right to demand that this system, which in and of itself has profited from our ancestors, then it therefore is incumbent upon them to aid in our you know, desires or wills or necessity to build communities that, you know, are healthy to where we can live, you know, decently as a people. When we speak of the white landlords, Huey P. Newton had addressed the fact of the who was it that the police was supposed to protect. And he clearly explained that the police could possibly be there to protect black people because we didn't own anything. And so therefore, he understood and recognized the use of the expression white landlords. However, if these white landlords did not create decent housing of our people, then that housing and that land should be made into cooperatives so that our people can live in communities. Cooperatives, of course, are similar to a concept in Africa, which is still exists indigenous black Africa today, minus all the Euro/Arab infiltration as a result of the Muslim and Christian enslavers of our people on the continent. And so this way of life, this cooperative, is known as Ubuntu. There's a group in Africa who speak what's called the Bantu languages. And the Bantu terminology is indigenous to the continent. I know there may be some who may have gotten other explanations, but the indigenous terminologies spoken throughout indigenous Africa, where the terms are actually referencing the community, the cooperative, unity, the clan, and so forth. And so this cooperative, in the sense that where we can establish, a sort of local trade in the communities, to where we can, exist in cohesion, to where one is not exploiting the other, and the other becomes susceptible to the whims of the one who wants to be in the community at the big shop. And that is cooperative. The people collectively perform the task, the necessary labor as a cooperative where we can all exist in cohesion together. And, of course, one of the main factors of that would be the ability of our women to be able to take care of our children and to nurture our children as they know how to do by nature and have been the quintessential examples around the world as nurturers of not only our children, but other people's children. You see, and so point number four, we want decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. And of course, also historically, from Reconstruction, Jim Crow on to modern times, some of us have may have heard of the Fresh and the Slum Law, which was popularized on the East Coast, where some of the brothers even during the 80s, you know, would rap about the conditions of the slum lord or the slum housing in our community, while at the same time, the very same people who are subjected to the slum lord are also encouraged to take part in the voting system periodically, whether it's on a local level, state level, or federal level. And so we have participated in the voting system when, in essence, the results lead to those who have benefited most. And in this voting system, more times than not, the persons who are placed in these positions more times than not have a relationship with the merchant or the property owners. And so it's like jumping out of a skillet into a frying pan until we as a people overthrow that relationship, this master-slave relationship. And when one finds himself, him or herself, because there can't be no him without no her, when one finds him or herself in this condition, and one finds himself subjected to the whims of the capitalist, which therefore leads to such things as, you know, the slums, housing not fit, not decent for us to live. And the blowback from that in terms of help, our help within these communities, which leads to, of course, more mortality rates than the other group of people, or a higher mortality rate than the dominant group, the so-called Europeans or the so-called whites. And so there's a number of things that extend out from the fact that being deprived of decent shelter. And, of course, this will always go back again. Might not be able to say it enough when we talk about economics, being able to have economic prosperity within these communities, like the in the so-called suburban areas, these rural areas of America, which have access to, you know, the various things that you know, makes their lives sustainable or comfortable. These things are placed in or near their communities that provide services and access to a good standard of living. Whereas what they refer to as the urban areas, in other words, the other terminology that they love to use is referred to as the periphery. Not only on the state level or national level, but also internationally. And so in the periphery, the neglect on the part of such entities, such as the banks, which practices the scandalous tactic that some of us may be familiar with as redlining, and which is one of the tactics on the part of the state to keep people of African descent in the conditions that they're in, regardless if they take one of us out of the hood, place us in the institution environment such as Harvard, UCLA, or LSU, and then some years later, those individuals go on to attain these positions within government and banking, and it's fed to our children as heroes, as standard persons to model our children after. Well, we know that that is as fantastical and as utopian as it can get, without losing our minds or without understanding the reality of the fact that there's 40 million of us here in this country. And so moving on, we go to point number five, where it says we want education for our people that exposes the true nature of this decadent American society. We want education that teaches us our true history and our role in the present day society. We believe in an educational system that will give to our people a knowledge of self. If a man does not have knowledge of self, of himself, and his position in society, in the world, then he has little chance to relate to anything else. Okay, so here we talk about where the Black Panther Party were able to understand that in order for people to prosper, in order to be able to attain these things in the 10-point program, that education was the key. And so they were able to not only understand that or point that out, they were also able to articulate what type of an education and that this type of education would be beneficial to people of African descent, otherwise known as Black people, within the jurisdiction of this country. And so we understand that historically, this education system has been one of complete brainwashing, treachery, misinformation, and a whole host of other things that you may be able to think of along those lines. And of course, the education with which we speak of is an education that exposes us, people of African descent, or Black people, our true role within the historical process, or our accomplishments as a people, not only here in America, but not only in Africa, but all over the world. And not only in terms of American history in the recent past, but also in the so-called medieval past, or the era of what's referred to as the Middle Ages, and beyond the Middle Ages into ancient times, and beyond ancient times into the very beginnings of the history of humanity. And we understand that the further you go back in time, in terms of a historical understanding, then the blacker it gets. And that the original people on this planet, the original people on this earth, were indeed Black people. And this is the type of understanding of educational system that the Black Panther Party felt that would be necessary for our people in order to be able to have the knowledge of himself and his position in the society, in the world, and stand in the chance to advance into the future. Malcolm X spoke about history, where he talked about, understanding history, and that we must study and understand history in order to be able to reap its rewards. For those who do it best will be those who understand it the most. And so within this system, of course, we are taught the American way of how this country was founded, the discovery of America by Christopher Columbus, who was no more than the agent of the white ruling class in Europe, in Central Europe. At the time, the queen and king, Isabella and Ferdinand, during the 15th century, and that Christopher Columbus set sail for the imperial ambitions of the king and the queen, who blessed his voyages along with the Pope. The Pope himself, historically, they were written, was known as papal bulls. And these papal bulls are official documentation in the European concept of law, where it establishes the right of the Europeans to confiscate any lands that were therefore discovered by Christopher Columbus in the name of the king and the queen. Okay, and so therefore, this is the beginning of the history of understanding how it has gotten to this point. And all the players have all been white. There hasn't been one black or African who played any role in terms of the power and the forces that were behind such individuals as Columbus. And of course, we know that Columbus could not have made those voyages without some type of financial stability, and that Columbus voyages were backed by the bankers who were back then, whose descendants now control and run the banking system of America under the Federal Reserve, which is a independent corporate entity separate from the American corporate entity disguised, written on paper, or in the history books referred to as a government. And so the system that had established itself therefore established an education system. And the education system was based on the exploits of the Europeans. And the Europeans have been clever enough to be in control of the history books. And books is one phase of what we can refer to as media, contrary to what we have usually been made to understand when the word media is brought up to the masses of the people. Media is no more than the communication between those who own the various forms of media, which is used to disseminate information to the rest of us. And we know that when it comes to black history, or black people for that matter, the history that has been shaped for people of African descent, black people, has been shaped by the same forces who influence the economic process, the political process, the banking system, and so forth. And so in the academic world, which is an arm of the state and the various institutions, those who have studied history or those who have taken history and put their own slant on it and therefore go into a collaborative effort to produce the standard textbook that goes in the various grades of school from the time of elementary school, high school, and going on further to secondary education, referred to as the universities and the colleges. And so they've been in control of this system since its inception. Its basic foundation based off was referred to as the German model. And the Germans during the 18th century, 17th century, were functioning under, you know, some of the oldest universities in modern times, such as Göttingen University, which is where the science of anthropology or naturalism and such things of that nature had pretty much taken its roots, which is extended out today in this current time, in this current place and time, that the terminologies and expressions that we use today, such as Caucasian, Ethiopian, Mongolian, you know, these terminologies that, that are used to classify the so-called different races on the planet. And, of course, when the Europeans finalized their understanding about Ethiopian, Caucasian, Mongolian, Malaysian, and American Indian, then the Europeans, when it came time to placing these groups in a sort of standard order, it was only naturally that the Europeans would be placed at the top and that the Ethiopian would be placed at the bottom. And so this is the history that shaped itself in the 18th century, moving on into the 19th century. And so the one main thing, what was understood about the Black Panther Party in terms of looking to Africa or developing the Black Power movement, to where the brothers and sisters had begun to don the dashiki and the afro to reestablish or reconnect with our motherland and our culture and who we are as a people, being proud of who we are, who we have been physically as a people. And of course, the highlight of African history and culture, modern and ancient, was so-called what the white man referred to as Egypt, where today still stands the most phenomenal monuments thus far known to humanity that were built by African people. And as a result of the slave trade, as a result of the imperial whims of the Europeans, then the European was able to be in possession of using media in order to distort the truth, in order to let out to the known world that the ancient Egyptians were anything other than black. And of course, naturally, they would have to be white. Now, we must understand that this is a crucial stage and crucial moment in the era during the physical era of slavery, the era of physical slavery, because it would be a contradiction, a stark contradiction, to understand that how is it that the people who we have had under our rule of thumb, who we have been treating so brutally, could be savages, primitives, and pagans, and polytheists, meaning worshiping more than one god. How is it that we can have these people under our rule of thumb and yet be the most intelligent people who built monuments that we don't understand, that we still don't understand today in all our technology that we use to build science and technology, physics, chemistry, and all these other things that it takes to build, you know, our exquisite monuments that we have today, our buildings, our skyscrapers. You see, and so it was incumbent upon the education wing of the white capitalist system to perpetuate the lie and the myth that the ancient Egyptians were white in order to justify the treatment of black people who they had methodically planned as a strategy to spin to the world that in Africa was a nation of savages, primitives, pagans, and last but not least, cannibals. So therefore, it couldn't be possible that civilized people, their treatment would be seen to be unjust in treating these black and brown people, these darkies, who later became Negroes, who graduated from Negroes to niggers. And now today, we've graduated to being called African Americans. Okay, and so this is a crucial part of being able to enslave black people continuously through the education system. and how the education system was molded and crafted in order to be able to keep black people in the conditions that they're in. And so the Black Panther Party understood that. And so therefore, community control and control of the community can therefore control of the schools that is in the communities in which we occupy, and that developing the education system, you know, that would tell our story, which is the true story, that the Egyptians is black, and this ancient civilization thousands of years ago existed in Northeast Africa, and not only was the ancient Egyptian civilization black, but all the civilizations in and around that area, in what is now known by the Europeans, carved out as the so-called Middle East or the Near East, and the civilizations that existed there also, from what they referred to as West Asia to as far as India. And all these civilizations were built by black people. And this is part of the understanding of what we mean by having our own control of the textbooks in order to be able to tell our story. And of course, we know that these things are cultural. They're to be embraced because all groups of people, whether they like it or not, come from some type of cultural perspective, which refers to the language that they speak, the dietary laws that they follow, the way they worship the God that they know, and a host of other things, even down to the material items that we may be in possession, our style of clothing, you know, and other extras, such as, you know, type of maybe, you know, jewelry or whatever that we wear. And so this is part of the whole cultural complex. And inside of that cultural complex is a sense of self. And, of course, we know there's different forms of self, self-pride, self-love, self-worth, self-esteem, which in the present scheme of things, the ones who have suffered from it most have been black women. And even under this system, this educational system, which in and of itself is based on a patriarchy, the accomplishments, the exploits of white men, beginning with Christopher Columbus, you know, around the world. And so this is what the Black Panther Party meant by establishing an educational system that will give our people a knowledge of self. And because we understood that it begins with the self. You can take a man's self from him and replace it with something else, then that man is forever lost until he somehow, some way, regains the capacity to realize that and then make these moves to extricate himself, you know, in order to regain himself and take his life out of the hands of his oppressor and place it back within his own. Okay, where we at? Okay, we're on point number six. Let's see, do we have any callers, comrade? Can y'all hear me? Am I still on? Hello, hello, hello.
Black power, no comments.
Okay, right.
No callers.
Okay. All right. Number six, we want all black men to be exempt from military service. We believe that black people should not be forced to fight in the military service to defend a racist government that does not protect us. We will not fight and kill other people of color in the world who, like black people, are being victimized by the white racist government of America. We will protect ourselves from the force and violence of the racist police and the racist military, whatever means necessary. We believe the black people should not be forced to fight in military service to defend a racist government that does not protect us. The Black Panther Party understood that during the times of the Vietnam War, and that the Vietnam War had placed America in a rather precarious situation. It divided the country. It put the country in a situation to where its government was vulnerable to various forces that existed during those times. And the Black Panther Party was one of those forces. And it's necessary at any moment in time to exploit the weaknesses that the state from time to time displays. Okay, and so this is one of those moments where we're talking about the military apparatus of this country and how the Black people during that time was joining the military to take part in these what I like to refer to as proxy wars. These wars were basically based on the accumulation or the confiscation of the natural resources of other lands. And more times than not, it has come down to these territories or these lands or these jurisdictions that have been under the feet of Black and brown people. In Africa, in Asia, in South America. And the Vietnam War was no more than no less than one of those which was an extension of the Americans coming to the rescue of the French, as the French had had their imperial holdings around the world, just like the British, who were contemporary with them, and that America had begun to spread its wings in an imperialistic way. And Vietnam was a classic example during those times when the Black Panther Party was in existence during the 60s. And so therefore, the Black Panther Party saw it as a contradiction that Black people who had been getting treated in such inhumane ways from the violence that was meted out to them by the police. And as a result of the police racist attacks against Black people during those times, the Black Panther Party developed a term for the police. And this term became to be known as the PED. There were those who were critical of the Black Panther Party for using such terms against those who we had been led were out there to serve the community and serve and protect, and protect the people from the bad guys. And so Huey P. Newton simply explained about that if you have ever seen a pig in the pen, and that this pig is a nasty, filthy animal, and Huey P. Newton felt that this pig's way of life or how it lived or how it, did its thing in the pen and such, what would be considered in a nasty manner. And that is the same type of treatment that Black people had been receiving, the nasty treatment from the police. Therefore, it ran congruent with how the pig does. And so therefore, the police became labeled as the pig. And it's only through an inherent relationship, a master-slave relationship between the master and the slave, because the slave is tired of being under the rule of thumb of the master. So therefore, the master has to develop an apparatus in order to keep himself in the locked position that he is. And so therefore, the police is first line of defense. It is a norm of the state, which today has become more heightened. It is now more militarized than ever. They have, under this system, supposedly these laws or these mandates that are supposedly able to prevent or to hog-tie the so-called military from interacting on the streets of America under what's known as posse comitatus. And the state and its proprietors, its business partners, its bankers, and so forth, the property owners, have figured out a way how to get around what's known as posse comitatus in order to militarize the police. Because it is necessary, because of the imperial ambitions or the capitalist ambitions or the furtherance of the capitalists in constant perpetuating themselves as the landlords, as those who control the capital, the job market, and everything else. And this is on the local level. On the international level, it is referred to as the military, which we are led to believe has been utilized only when it has gotten to the point that diplomacy has ran its course. And along with that, it's referred to as sanctions. And H. Rap Brown was clever enough to understand that sanctions is just simply war without bloodshed. And so military in and of itself able to function, and because of the situation or the conditions due to the lack of economic prosperity, at points in our existence, then the military has been presented to us as a benevolent army that has gone around the world and has liberated other nations of people from tyrants or brutal dictators who operated under the term that is constantly used towards them as a regime. And so the military developing all these different things, these skills and whatnot, and therefore providing a opportunity or window of opportunity to make something of oneself. And so therefore the various commercials, the various propaganda commercials that they began to use and which has perfected its game today. And so therefore a lot of people of African descent have turned in that direction to so-called make something of themselves. And the Black Panther Party, and understanding that, and also Malcolm X and other individuals. Yet, we understand that in order to be able to exist collectively as a people, that we should not take part in their militaristic ventures around the world to confiscate foreign lands in order to be able to dominate the foreign lands under which they have confiscated and to exploit their natural resources. And the military is no more than no less than protectors of those international interests referred to as international policy, whether it's the jackass or the elephant, whether it's the Democrat or the Republican, in other words. And so Black people should not take part in such ventures, especially when it comes to, you know, times where this military makes war on our own people, especially in Africa. And there's been episodes in Africa where the military has gone in under the false pretenses of terrorism, under the false pretenses of liberating, you know, a village of Black women and their children, while at the same time, to give you an example, that what we're talking about here is a sham, during the Tutsi, the Hutu and Tutsi tribal warfare, which took a toll, tunes of hundreds of thousands of victims who were murdered. And this was no more, no less than a French instigated strategy or operation, which goes back to the history of the Tutsi and the Hutus, one being given amenities at the expense of the other, And so the side who had got the short end of the stick retaliated, and so therefore those who did have the long side of the stick led to the latest round. And so these are the type of tactics, strategies that is used by not only the American military, but the militaries of their buddies who are now calling themselves the G7 or the G9, established themselves under what's referred to as NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is what you see today supposedly in opposition to Putin's war on Ukraine on behalf of Russia. And so we say, as the Black Panther Party said then, that black people shouldn't take part in these imperial wars. And of course, the understanding of being so-called Christians or devout religious persons who are willing to bypass that in order to take part in these imperial wars. We believe that black people should have their own people army, some of us. Some of us, especially because of the treatment of black people by police. And this historic phenomenon of the police murdering typically unarmed black men. And, of course, there's been some high-profile cases. The latest one, which was the news of all news over the past couple of years, was the George Floyd phenomenon. And as a result of that, you see the various types of operations that have been carried out, various types of strategies that have been used to lure black people back in to the position that they're in. You see, and so we also believe that, again, black people should not take part in these imperial wars, which more times than not will be taken out and carried out against black and brown people due to the inherent reliability or dependency on natural resources. Point number seven, it says we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people, of course, which is, you know, follows upon point number six. We believe we can end police brutality in our black community by organized black self-defense groups that are dedicated to defending our black community from racist police oppression and brutality. Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States gives a right to bear arms. We therefore believe that all black people should arm themselves for self-defense. The first part of that, we talk about the endless police brutality in the black community, organizing black self-defense groups. Of course, in the beginning, pointed out the Black Panther Party, we started off with the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, a black nationalist organization. And they believe that due to the inherent relationship between the state and the oppressed masses of black people, that the police couldn't possibly have a coherent relationship with the oppressed, since the oppressor was the ones who controlled and steered the machinery. And of course, the machinery has an arm in the police. And so we know that that's a stark contradiction. And so it is utopian to think that police somehow, some kind of way, someday is just going to wake up and just change courses overnight, that we somehow are going to catch a break, or that these atrocities that are being carried out against black people just somehow, some kind of way, going to stop. And there have been those who come in our midst who have tried to reform the police, and those who come in our midst who have tried to get us to go to the voting polls and whatnot. But let's face the fact, the reality is that when the police, or when one becomes a police officer, one is trained. One is trained in so many ways and so many fashions in a militaristic way, more than ever now. And so we understand that the police has to do its job because it's incumbent upon the state to stay protected from those who don't have the things that they had. So therefore, this is a relationship between the haves and the have-nots, and that the have-nots are somehow some kind of we're going to try to get. And in the communities, in these neighborhoods, in the occupied colonies, there will be instances where the state, which is referred to as crime, are going to, partake in what we refer to as street activities. And of course, again, as I said earlier, that crime and politics cannot go hand in glove. And so therefore, it's incumbent on the people to, replace the system with a humanistic one in order to be able to change this relationship that we have with the police. And of course, therefore, any time that one is constantly brutally assaulted, then it's only natural that the one who is receiving the brunt of the blows will naturally come around at some point where he or she has to defend himself. And this is one of the things that alarmed the state through its FBI apparatus led by Jed Kahoot. And so therefore, as a result of the Black Panther Party exercising their Second Amendment right to the Constitution for the right to bear arms in order to be able to protect our communities or to teach the rest of us in the community how to protect ourselves. And so therefore, being armed for self-defense. And as a result of that, Jed Kahuba's counterintelligence program went into full swing. In the meantime, the media was able to portray the Black Panther Party as a bunch of gun-toting thugs who had a high propensity for violence. But if you check the historical record, you will see that clearly the Black Panther Party were never the aggressors, not one time. And some people may look at the incident with Eldridge Cleaver and Lil Bobby Hutt, but yet take no account of the lead up to that unfortunate incident where our young hero, Bobby Hutton, was murdered, political murder, who had his hands up, who was surrendering himself, okay? And so, therefore, it's incumbent upon, black people to defend themselves, to form the necessary clubs or groups. Right now here in America, there are numerous white clubs or white groups, gun clubs, who have organized themselves, and it's perfectly all right. It's perfectly okay. There's no hoopla. There's no this outburst or outcry or protests or vehemency on the part of the politicians or the CEO himself, the president. So therefore, it is also the right of black people to exercise their constitutional rights. And before the Black Panther Party, there was one Robert Williams in South Carolina, I believe, where he had realized the same thing, the type of brutality that was being carried out against the black people in his state, in his neck of the woods, by these wanton, violent, animalistic, savage whites. And so Robert Williams began to organize the people into black self-defense groups, in particularly the women and the sisters. And so this idea was had an effect on Huey P. Newton. And so Huey P. Newton had gathered from Robert Williams the idea of black self-defense groups, and the Black Panther logo had adopted the Black Panther logo from the original Black Panthers in Lowndes County. And so Robert Williams, as a result of his understanding that black people could not rely on the government, they couldn't rely on the Kennedys, then black people were left to themselves, and so it was only natural they deformed black self, that they formed black self-defense groups. And as a result of that, Robert Williams became public enemy number one, to the point where Robert Williams had to actually flee the country. And in the process of that, Robert Williams was able to build a relationship internationally with, you know, other black and brown people. And so, you know, the Black Panther Party was simply trying to get black people to understand the right to self-defense and the right to bear arms, through what we are told is the Second Amendment to the Constitution. Number nine, it says, we want freedom for all black men held in federal, state, county, and city prisons and jails. We believe that all black people should be released from many jails and prisons because they have not reached a fair and impartial trial. And of course, we understand the jailing system, the penitentiary, as another form of social control of the very people whom it despises, which are the descendants, the slaves of the Africans who were forced, made the slave, and built the system. The state understood that with the writing on the wall for physical slavery in, then there would be a population which would then become a surplus population. We had value before physical slavery ended, and we became valueless after physical slavery in the 1860s, on in the Reconstruction. It was either we become a surplus population, or there was a new way to re-enslave us, you know, through sharecropping. And so one thing has led to the next, which is a tremendous escalation in the warehousing of black people in particular, and other so-called people of colors, or non-whites. And so this is what they meant by saying, we want freedom of all black people held in federal, state, and county, and city prisons and jails. We believe all black people should be released from many jails and prisons because they have not received a fair and partial trial. And of course, the fair and partial trial, of course, has been historic, has been a legacy of this government in order to reap the benefits of the prison system, which is now has transformed itself into private corporations who own shares and stocks in the Wall Street game, in the S&P or NASDAQ, in terms of the daily operation in the market of stocks and bonds and shares, corporate shares. And so, as I said, the warehousing of black people is also part of the social control network, the reduction of the black population, which more times than not is another detriment on black women, which has left black women vulnerable to the whims of the state, to the so-called white man, who we understood in the Jim Crow era as the honky. The honky was one who preyed on black women who were vulnerable. And so it is no coincidence that coming out of the 60s and on into the 80s, at first, the heroin program that was carried out against black and brown communities under Nixon's regime, under Ehrlichman, who himself had admitted that the heroin trade was instituted to keep the Negro masses off balance. And so on into the 80s, after the depletion of economics in terms of jobs within the community, and these jobs being transported overseas. And so therefore, the strategic program to reinsert the capitalist domination of the black community, and therefore to throw it into further chaos with the introduction of the cocaine trade. featuring Rick Ross, who had become known as Freeway Rick on the West Coast in Los Angeles. So we understand that the whole dope trade and everything else that drives the prison system is in itself is criminal and it's part of the system, and it's a natural phenomenon for those who have found ways to further their dominance over the black community. Number nine, we want all black people when brought to trial to be tried in court by a jury of their peers, group, or people from their black community as defined by the Constitution of the United States. We believe that the court should follow the United States Constitution so that black people will receive fair trials. 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution gives a man a right to be tried by his peer group. A peer is a person from a similar economic, social, religious, geographical, environmental, historical, and racial background. To do this, the court will be forced to select a jury from the black community from which the black defendant came. And we have been and are being tried by all white jurors that have no understanding of the average reasoning man of the black community. And of course, this is a, an extension of, the 8 point. And of course, this is what we still understand and believe today. And there's been several high profile cases where this has, manifested itself. If some of us can remember the Rodney King trial and some other cases that arise in the recent past. And of course, in this scandalous process where the jurors are selected, the term I think is voir dire. Some of us may have been selected to jury duty and have experienced that. But as the state understands it as to keep transforming itself as a chameleon, then we understand that this was going to take place. And so this is why the Black Panther Party, got around to point number nine. Our last one, we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And as our major political objective, a United Nations supervised plebiscite to be held throughout the black colony, in which only black colonial subjects will be allowed to participate for the purpose of determining the will of black people as of their national destiny. And then they added what is referred to apart from the Declaration of Independence, which these white capitalist slave masters, property owners, had written up and signed in opposition to the British Crown, the king of whom they referred to as Tyre. It says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, the governments are instituted among us, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it or abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, would dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all the experience had shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer by evils or sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. As I stated, this Declaration of Independence, as hypocritical as its authors were, having the nerve to refer to the King of England as a tyrant, as an oppressor, while in themselves owning other human beings were Africans who were in what we refer to in the common vernacular as black. However, we do concur with the fact that the King of England was a tyrant, which spurred on these beautiful words, and we as African people believe that the King today, whether he's black or white, whether he's a Democrat or Republican, is the same tyrant under the same system of capitalism, which has been built upon the backs of black people, Africans, who were made slaves by force. And we believe that if they call for the dismantling of a system then it's also our right to call for the dismantling of this system, contrary to all the bullshit and jive that has come from the talking heads who look like us, who represent the powers that be, who are willing to prostitute themselves to help keep the collective masses of black people in the conditions that we are off, that we are in. And so therefore, United Nations supervised plebiscite to be held throughout the black colony, in which only black colonial subjects will be allowed to participate for the purpose of determining the will of black people as of their national destiny. And we concur and we say that the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party today is still relevant as it was then. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., the national chairman of the Black Panther Party Cubs, I was heard say that the Black Panther Party was defeated militarily, but they were not defeated ideologically. And we believe that this brother, the statement that he made, was 100% correct. And we also believe that in order for black people to attain the things that is our natural right, that we should stay on the same course as the 10-point program. There may be those who object, and that's fine. But we don't plan on being on the wrong side of history, even though there'll be times where there are these unseen forces and things will take place that we have no control over. But however, is how we make the adjustments to them. And so reality is reality, as opposed to the bullshit, again, that comes from those in our midst who have misguided us. And black people have to put their own destiny back into their own hands. And so we are at the last few ticks of tonight's show, and I would like to thank all the listeners for listening to tonight's show. And stay tuned next week, same time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesday, to the In Defense of the People's Radio. And it's been a blast, been a storm blast. And on that note, we say black power and also Yahuru and all power to the people. Take us out, brother, if you can, with a little taste of music, if you can.